My name is Michael Welch, and you're listening to the Global Research News Hour, a program funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, the Innu, Oji Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation, the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The show seeks to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our shows are available to partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. This week, we present a special episode devoted to the upcoming election in the United States. Polls currently suggest a neck-and-neck race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. However, there are a few third-party candidates that may retain enough votes to make a substantial difference for one candidate or another. A Gallup poll released on October 1st said that 58% of Americans agree that a third-party major party is needed in the U.S. because the Republican and Democratic parties, quote, do such a poor job, unquote. We're going to play excerpts from a debate of third-party candidates held recently in Los Angeles to explore the vast area of issues that either went unaddressed in the major Democrat-Republican debates or on which both candidates were in full agreement with no hint of an alternative perspective. The event was held by the Free and Equal Foundation. We contacted Mike Leon, the group's Director of Policy and Strategy, to explain some of the details around the Free and Equal Elections presidential debate.
Are these debates of Free and Equal different in content and format from the big Republican-Democratic debates in the past year?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think a lot of people maybe don't know what has happened over the last year. First off, the television networks kind of circumventing the congressional presidential debate committee that kind of puts on the debates and chooses the moderators and picks the threshold that national polling is showing these candidates. We're trying to kind of alleviate some of that and add discourse to all of this. So freeandequal.org, you want to find out more about us, first and foremost. We've been putting on debate series throughout not only the primary season, but we just had this one that you mentioned in October a couple of weeks ago with Chase Oliver from the Libertarian Party, Dr. Jill Stein from the Green Party, Randall Terry from the Constitution Party. And what we do is the threshold is a lot lower to qualify for these debates. We have a blockchain app where people can participate and vote on who they think won the debate itself. We also have, obviously, our founder, Christina Tobin, was a moderator, as well as former U.S. Comptroller General David Walker. So it's about a 3-hour format, and we're really hitting, 10, 11, 12 topics that we want the candidates to respond to, rebut each other. So it's very different than a 90-minute, on a network, and that anchor is selected by that network. And, you don't know the questions ahead of time. Like, this is kind of like a true participation type thing as we put on these debates. In January, our debate, Jason Palmer, a Democratic presidential candidate, emerged from that debate. And he actually beat President Biden in the American Samoa caucus, if you recall, Michael. So we put on these debates because we're trying to encourage dialogue and discourse between all of the candidates. I mentioned before about who was out on the stage, but we invited Vice President Harris. We invited former President Trump. We invited Dr. Cornel West, Claudia De La Cruz from the Socialism and Liberation Party. So we invite everybody. The threshold is a little bit lower in terms of national polling, so you can qualify for this. And again, this was put on by C-SPAN 2. It aired on Scripps News nationally. So, we work with other television networks to kind of put this on, but it's an all-encompassing debate, and it includes candidates from all parties. That's what we want: more voices, more choices, so people can find out who is truly on that ballot that you're filling out here in early voting and come November.
Okay. Other than the lack of promotion in the media, what are some of the ways in which the system is rigged against third-party candidates?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm not crazy about your framing, but I do agree with your framing, if you know what I mean, right? Because, like, here's the thing, right, Mike? Like, as you know this, and I've learned this navigating the television world, right? It's all subjective, first and foremost. And then the secondary part is the lack of money. And money leads to the ability to, forget the grassroots part of this, money can help knock down the walls of access. You know, so if you can't get on a Fox News, a CNN, MSNBC, which we know that's only maybe 8 to 9 million viewers, right? People are creating ancillary and non-traditional platforms to be able to listen to content. When we've seen it this political cycle, by the way, Joe Rogan with his podcast, we've seen Andrew Schultz with his podcast, Kamala Harris was just on, you know, Shannon Sharp, a former NFL player who created a platform that has millions of followers, and he has the most watched video of 2024 with an interview with Cat Williams. So people are creating content and platforms through non-traditional means. So there's a way to circumvent that right now, very small, but that access, right, in terms of the linear networks that I mentioned before, brings legitimacy. And so when you lose the legitimacy arm, when you don't look, sound, and smell like something else, because you're not invited to those parties where that look, sound, and smell, you know, you can potentially get some of that, that causes people to not be able to look at you further or learn more about you. Then the secondary part comes in with the financing part of it. And that's the ability to actually run a campaign and to hire, you know, a big time campaign manager and put boots to the ground of folks that you can hire, regional organizing directors, so on and so forth across different battleground states, get yourself on the ballots and ballot access. The system is, I wouldn't use the word rigged, but there is another word that has a similar connotation to it. It's out there. About how it doesn't allow for the person to grow and get the public funding. Remember, if you get to 5% in national polling, you qualify for public funding to be able to help with your campaign. And right now we see that the access is kind of cut off because it's all fruit from the poisonous tree, Michael, right? Like what happens first at the onset is you don't get the legitimacy because you're not invited on those national platforms to be able to talk about your candidacy. And then the money doesn't come in. So you can't actually, you know, water those other areas that I talked about. So that's really anybody you've asked. And I've asked a bunch of people that have run in the third party lane, not only at the national level for president, but also people that have run a gubernatorial races and things like that. There is things that are at play to squash and quell those people from not being able to get their message out. And you can always pinpoint it to two things. It's access to the people that give you the legitimacy, and then it's the financial part of this and the backing to be able to do the rest of the things that I just mentioned.
It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Mike Leon. Thank you very much for participating and I guess giving us this window into a expanded debate on this important race for the White House.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And again, freeandequal.org. Check out about us. See the debates, the replays of it. It replayed on C-SPAN and aired on Scripps News. Find out more about us if you want to donate. There's a donate button there to the foundation, all the work that we're doing. So please go check us out. Thanks for having me, Michael.
That was Mike Leon speaking on behalf of Free and Equal Elections. Now let's hear some of the debate on the Global Research News Hour. It is moderated by Free and Equal founder Christina Tobin and by the former U.S. Comptroller General David Walker.
The order of the candidates was determined by a random draw, and we will start with an opening statement from Dr. Jill Stein.
Thank you so much, Christina. Thank you, Mr. Walker. And thank you especially to Free and Equal Foundation. Thank you to everyone who's here live and virtually. This is such an important institution that Free and Equal has been developing, and shame on our political major parties that they are not participating in debates and that the candidates are not here tonight. I'm Jill Stein. I'm the presidential nominee of the Green Party, a people-powered party that does not take corrupting money from wealthy elites and corporations. We are 100% of, by, and for the people. As you know, who funds you runs you. So on that account, we are here for everyday people. We're in this to fight for everyday Americans who've been thrown under the bus for too long. We are the only pro-worker, anti-war, anti-genocide climate emergency campaign on the ballot for nearly all voters voters across the country, and we're here to demand an America that works for all of us, and we offer specific solutions that are within our reach now. Congress is squandering half of our budget on the endless war machine, impoverishing and endangering all of us, producing failed states, mass migrations. It's time to cut the military budget at least 50% and put those dollars into true security here at home. It's time for an improved Medicare for All system that covers everyone comprehensively and saves us $500 billion a year just by cutting red tape and bureaucracy. We can push back on the housing crisis with a national program of rent control, a tenant bill of rights, and quality social housing. We can fight the climate crisis with a Green New Deal that creates millions of jobs, greening our energy, food, transportation, and housing. And we can pay for this through health savings from Medicare for All, cutting the military budget, taxing the rich, and reviving a productive economy. The need for deep change has never been so urgent. The possibility of that change has never been so close at hand. Go to JillStein2024.org to volunteer, donate, and
thank
seize
you.
This moment for the perfect storm.
Thank you, Mr.
Revolution.
Chase Oliver. Thank you.
Thank you very much to our moderators, to my fellow candidates, and to the Free and Equal Debate Foundation for having an open and honest discourse and debate, which is something that is lacking in the mainstream of American politics. My name is Chase Oliver. I'm honored to be the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States in the 2024 election. I'm honored to be the independent voice that's on the ballot in the most states in this country. And if you need an alternative voice to fight for you, I am that person. The Libertarian Party is a party that roots itself in the philosophy of non-aggression. If you're not harming other people with your behavior is perfectly acceptable and should not be regulated or controlled by a government or any other entity. You are free to be yourself. Because if you're exercising that right, you're exercising self-governance. And if everybody exercised self-governance, there would be no need for any other form of government. Absent that ideal, we need to fight to keep government small, transparent, and accountable to each and every person. We need to cut the size of the state. There is no way to tax ourselves out of the deficits and debt that we are currently facing that will cause calamity for future generations if we continue to let it mount. Right now, $9 billion a day is being used just to finance the interest alone on the debt. And I think there are a better way for American people to be using $9 billion than to be funding the interest on the national debt. We want to tear down the state and decentralize ourselves as much as possible, because we know central planners in Washington, D.C., A, are not acting in your best interest. They're acting in the interests of those who fund them, namely corporate America. And B, we believe that resources can better be allocated at the decentralized level, at best, the individual level, where we can exercise our own governance, allocate our own resources, and help those in our community without the central planning and without the bureaucracy and all the waste, fraud, and abuse that comes with that. Each and every person should be able to live their life as they see fit. Go to VoteChaseOliver.com if you believe in the message of living in peace. If you live in peace, your life should be your life, your body should be your body, and your business should be your business, not the federal government's. Thank you very much.
Randall Terry.
Thank you so much for the privilege of being here. The Constitution Party nominated me, Randall Terry, to be their presidential candidate. Our party is unique in that, number one, we strive to base everything that we do and believe and promote on the Constitution. It's not an antiquated document, it's the governing document of this country. But beyond that, we strive to build everything that we say and do, our policies, literally the foundation of culture and society, upon the Judeo-Christian ethic given to us through Moses and Christ. And as I said in the last debate, if anyone thinks that they're smarter, wiser, more just, more fair, more merciful, if they think they're better than Moses and Jesus, run from that person. Karl Marx, whoever they are, run away. Because at the end of the day, Western civilization, as we know it, is, was, and please God, always has been built on Judeo-Christian ethics. Now, in tonight's debate, I'm going to answer some questions from a theocentric position. Because literally, the laws of Moses, the Gospels of Christ, the Old and New Testament, they provide rules for us. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't bear false witness. Don't murder. These are rules that are binding on all people, no matter what their faith or if they have no faith. They're the foundation of society. And for us, the non-negotiables are, you shall not murder. Abortion is murder, and we will strive to crush it and drive it back to the gates of hell where it came from. Marriage is between one man and one woman, period. And we will fight against the woke culture saying that you can tell a boy can mutilate his genitals or a girl can mutilate her genitals and change genders. This too is a lie, and it's a betrayal of science, it's a betrayal of humanity, it's a betrayal of God's created order. If you want to learn more, some of you have been seeing our TV ads on TV, go to Terry2024.com, Terry2024.com. I look forward to a vibrant debate.
We're going to go to question number one here for starting with Dr. Jill Stein. How would you address the current challenge of affordable housing? You'll have 1 minute to respond.
We do have an affordable housing crisis, a really emergency. Evictions are at an all-time high. Homelessness is at an all-time high. This is very much related to the skyrocketing housing costs. We need an emergency program of rent control to basically stabilize housing costs across the country, a federal rent control program. We need to end the buy-up of our housing stock, rental and permanent housing, by the private equity industry, which is hanging onto that housing, hoarding it, and sitting on it in order to drive the price up. We need a vacancy tax, which will help drive those apartments back onto the market. And we need to build quality public housing, so-called social housing. We call for the building of 15 million units of that. And in part, that can be funded through the Green New Deal. By declaring a climate emergency, we unleash over half a trillion dollars every year to deal with that crisis, which includes building quality, environmentally sound housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Chase Oliver.
So first and foremost, we need to understand that the housing crisis, by and large, much of this is a local issue. It's a fact of supply. The reason why housing costs are rising so much is that the demand is much greater than the supply of housing that's been built. And a lot of that is due to restrictionist zoning regulations, NIMBYs, not in my backyards, who say they want to solve the problem. They don't want to build multi-unit housing in their neighborhoods. These kinds of zonings need to end. And also, we need to address the fact that even in a local government sense, you don't really own your home because you pay property taxes. And if you don't pay those property taxes, the government can come seize the home that you apparently own. And so this is one of the reasons why we fight taxation at every level. But what got us involved in the housing crisis of 2008? It was government intervention in the marketplace. It was the Bush administration who wanted to inject a bunch of money into the real estate industry and create conditions where people were getting loans that didn't need to be getting loans. And what that did is it created instability in the system. And of course, we saw the bank failures. We saw Bear Stearns and our Lehman Brothers.
Thank you.
Falling underneath. We need to fix this.
Appreciate it. Randall Terry.
I am a well-dressed, semi-articulate squatter, or a serf, if you will. Because even if we pay off our mortgage, which we hope to do soon, we don't own the home. The government owns the home. And one of the principles that we fight for, along with the Libertarian Party, is the complete abolition of property tax. It is not home ownership. It is based in a Marxist principle that everything belongs to the government. The inflation, the insane inflation that's going on in the housing market is based partly before it was based upon interest rates being so low. It was also based upon BlackRock and other huge institutions just buying up houses. It's supply and demand. It's driving up the cost of housing. And we long for the day when every man can sit under his own fig tree enjoying the fruit of his own vine and not have to pay property tax and not have an exorbitant mortgage and not have BlackRock as their landlord.
Thank you.
Next, let's go to Randall Terry. The federal government has over $35 trillion in debt. However, that's just the tip of the iceberg. In reality, the government has over $125 trillion in total liabilities and unfunded social insurance obligations. Interest is our second largest expense. It's past defense and it's past Medicare, and it's growing rapidly. What steps would you take to put our federal finances in order, because they're clearly out of control?
I'm going to give the most stark answer that I can. Number one, I don't know. And the reason I'm going to be honest is because no one in the history of the human race has had a debt ratio like we have, debt to income ratio. It's never been done. That's number one. Number two, we're functioning under fiat currency. The only reason that the dollar is still the currency of refuge for most of the world is because of oil. Petrodollars. We're internationally obligated. Everyone is to trade in dollars. If that currency obligation went away and another currency replaced it, the dollar would no longer be the place that people would flee for refuge, and we could see the collapse of the dollar. At that point, all bets are off. It's literally the only reason the dollar functions is because I trust when I give you a dollar that you're going to take it. And if the dollar goes the way of the Confederate dollar and it has no value or little value, or if it goes the way of the German money and the people are coming up in wheelbarrows to buy their bread, we don't know what's going to happen. In the scriptures, remember what I said earlier on, there was a thing called the Year of Jubilee, where every 50 years, all debt was forgiven. And at some point, the world is going to face an economic crisis, because we're not the only ones that are in massive debt. The whole world is. And it is in part tied to the fact that we are all functioning with perhaps Switzerland as the odd man out. We're all functioning on fiat currency. We're all functioning on pretend money. It's monopoly money. We just trust that it will work. If the day comes when there is an economic collapse worldwide, it may just be that we're not paying our debt and no one else is paying their debt, and we're going to start at square one and either go back to a silver and gold backed currency or literally go back to silver and gold. So I don't think that there's a way out. I literally don't believe that there is a way out. And I've thought about this a lot over the years, and I think it's gotten worse, and I don't think there's a way out.
Thank you, Dr. Stein.
There are many things we can do to begin reining in the enormous federal debt. For one thing, we need to cut the military budget, which is spending at least $1 trillion and far more every year of our hard-earned money. This is over half of the congressional budget. Depending on how you calculate it, it's at least 60%. If you add in the Veterans Administration taking care of our wounded veterans, which we need to do, the nuclear power, and so on, the FBI, ICE, et cetera, it comes to more like 60 or 65%, which doesn't leave much for the American people. So we need to start cutting the military budget, cut it by at least half. We'll still be far ahead of all of our competitors. In terms of their military budgets, and that can help put a lot of dollars into a more fiscally sound budget. We need to enact health care through a Medicare for All program, which actually saves us $500 billion per year at the same time that it expands health care to cover everyone and cover everyone comprehensively. Some $4 trillion a year is being spent now on health care. One out of every three health care dollars is being spent on paper pushing, red tape, and bureaucracy. That's not serving the cause of health care. This is enormously wasted. So that needs to be reined in. We also need to start taxing the rich and corporations. We need a wealth tax. We need a more steeply progressive tax. You can go back to after the Second World War, when we were taxing at the highest marginal rate of up to 90%, with tax credits for expenditures on the economy and investing in the economy. And finally, we can create a productive economy again. We've financialized the economy. We need a productive economy which
You're out of
is
time.
Capable of actually contributing to our budget.
Okay, Oliver.
So I want to say I agree with Jill Stein that we need to cut the Pentagon by at least 50%. And I want to agree with Randall Terry that we might be too far gone to actually fix this problem. But I want to say we have to attempt to fix the problem. And that starts by cutting out what government does. Government does way too many things. And that's the reason why we run trillion-dollar deficits every year. It's because they exercise power beyond their boundaries, beyond what they should be doing under the Constitution. And this costs a lot of money. This failure to get our fiscal house in order will lead to calamity for our kids and grandkids. This is why I support balancing the budget today. Submitting a balanced budget to Congress, and if they don't bring me one back, it's a vetoed budget that I would return back to them if I were President of the United States. We have to hold ourselves to that higher ideal. Now, right now, again, $9 billion a day is what we're spending just to function the interest on the debt. And I'd like to believe that we could just tax the rich and tax our way out of it, but if we taxed every single billionaire in this country, we would fund the government for less than a few months. and it would be gone. And there'd be no new wealth created by their economic activity. We cannot tax ourselves out of the problem. We have to cut spending. And how do we pay down the debt? You don't do it by taxing regular individuals either. What do you do when you're in debt? You have to sell some of your assets to pay for that. We have lots of federal land that we can start to gradually sell off and index to only pay down the debt, not to pay for other programs. And we don't need to be adding more social programs to the cost every year on our budget. That will lead us further and further into the debt spiral. We have to get our fiscal house in order. We have to be brave enough to say this. And yes, there will be pain from that. There will be. But there would have been less pain if we had balanced the budget 10 years ago. There will be more pain if we wait to balance the budget 10 years from now. And I'm ready to say my generation, the millennial generation, has already been shafted enough. We're willing to take the pain so that it doesn't go on to Generation Z, Gen Alpha, and everyone afterwards. It's time for us to be realistic to the adults in the room and say government does too much, spends too much, and we have to cut the spending. And that's exactly what we've seen in a nation like Argentina that had a huge debt ratio, and we're seeing an actual turnaround in Malaysia, Argentina. Thank you.
Do we have any rebuttal?
Yes. Most people watching have no concept that what a debt crisis could do to us, because the government is sending us money. It saved businesses. Literally, people went out and bought guitars and bought all kind of electronic stuff. America became the wonder of the world economically, because from the 1600s to the 1913, with the introduction of the direct taxation, we averaged 1 to 2% total taxation. 1 to 2%, with the exception of right after the Civil War, there was a 10% tax to retire the war debt. We were the economic wonder of the world. If the government would limit itself to constitutional spending, in other words, here's what the government is allowed to do. Oh, we need money for roads. We need money for the post office. We need money for a military. Okay, but most government programs and most government expenditures are not constitutional. So we have to get rid of them. And God Almighty, who made heaven and earth, only wants 10% from everyone. So Jill Stein's idea and the Green Party's idea that we're going to tax the wealthy at 76 and 80, 90%, that's tyranny. That's Marxism. It is evil. It is theft. And it is unrighteous.
Any other rebuttals? Dr. Stein.
Yes. So I agree that we do need to cut some spending, and that should be on corporate welfare and on the military budget, which are robbing us blind. Studies have shown that much of the inflation in the last several years was actually greedflation. It was needless increases in costs in order to contribute to the profits of corporations. We're looking at a massively inflated military budget right now, which is largely accruing to the profits of the war contractors, and the same thing with fossil fuels. Those prices have massively escalated, and the profits of those countries, of those companies, have actually doubled. If you look at Argentina, and I'm glad, Chase, you brought up Argentina, you know, an example of a libertarian government. I think it's the only one I know of. There may be others out there, but I'm not aware of them. You know, we're seeing at what shock therapy looks like, what public austerity and deregulation looks like. And from what I've heard about this and read recently, the poverty rates are up about 57%.
And we're done.
Yeah, so. And we're done.
All right. Another rebuttal?
I think we're done on the rebuttals on this one.
They can keep going.
Yep. Am I able to rebut?
Chase was up.
I apologize, Chase. Please, go right ahead.
So I'd like to say, yes, corporations are greedy, but it's not just greedy corporations that cause the inflation we're facing. Corporations were greedy in the past. They're going to be greedy in the future. They're driven by the almighty dollar. What's driving inflation right now is the fact that we print trillions of dollars out of thin air and deficit spending. It creates the inflation that we're all feeling. It creates the pinch you're feeling when you go to the grocery store. Yes, corporations are greedy. This is why we need to get rid of corporate welfare like Jill said, but get rid of all subsidies, all carve-outs, all deductions, and flatten the tax code so more people can enter the market as emerging entrepreneurs. So they don't have to be employed by the man. They can become their own boss. They can start their own business and create their own economic activity. This would bring about a huge amount of jobs in this country through the free market, but we have to reduce spending. Deficit spending is the primary driver of inflation, and we cannot tax our way out of it. Taxation is theft, and we cannot let the government steal out of our pockets to pay down the debt that they've created for themselves through unconstitutional actions. Thank you very much.
Randall, did you rebut?
One word. You want to get rid of all of this debt? ANWR.
All right. We got to toss to a break. So thank you, candidates. We'll be right back with the debate. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcasting from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and from partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. Right now, we are listening to the free and equal presidential debate from Los Angeles on October 23rd, featuring candidates Jill Stein of the Green Party, Chase Oliver of the Libertarian Party, and Randall Terry of the Constitution Party. Here is more of the discussion.
Randall, one of the issues that the American people are concerned about is border security and related immigration issues. So as president, what steps would you take to strengthen border security, improve vetting of high-risk individuals, and while at the same point in time, promoting legal immigration, because our birth rate is only 1.62, which means we would have a declining population without immigration?
Well, we should build a wall across the northern border to keep the Canadians out there trying to come in. Thank you. So the simple fact is that we have the ability to build a wall. We really do. We have the ability to control the southern border. We don't have the will. And the question is, why would the people who are in power not want to control our southern border? Because up until recent decades, this really was not a crisis. We are all immigrants. Unless you're a Native American, we're all immigrants. So thank God for immigration. Thank God we can come here. But we came here legally. My family came through Ellis Island. So why do they want an open border? There's a lot of theories. I know a couple of them, for sure. They want cheap labor. They want Democrats. You have to understand that at the end of the day, this is political. The Democrat Party knows that at some point in time, a general amnesty is inevitable if they're in power. And when that general amnesty happens, polling data shows that 80% of illegal immigrants will register as Democrats, which means Texas will be lost, Arizona will be permanently lost, probably Florida will be lost, and other states where there's a huge Hispanic population here illegally will suddenly flip from being Republican states to being Democrat states. And at that point, a path to the White House for any even moderately conservative human being, whether Libertarian or Constitution Party or Republican, it's over. It's done. So build a wall. It's not hard to do. We have the resources, we have the money. Build a wall and then determine how many people we let in for what reasons. Because we do want people to come in on a day-by-day basis because of the jobs, because of the things that they're doing. But what we're gonna have to do is we're gonna have to have a mass deportation. And once it starts, once you start literally putting people on planes or on buses, other people are gonna say, hey, you don't need to put me on that bus, I'll go on my own, leave me alone.
Thank you, Dr. Stein.
So I want to start off by saying that the most important thing we can do to address the crisis of immigration is to stop causing it in the first place through U.S. policies like endless wars and regime change operations, like economic and military domination and neocolonialism, through the sanctions programs like in Cuba and Venezuela, through fossil fuel emissions, which continue to drive the climate crisis, forcing millions of farmers who are out of work because there's no water and they can't farm, forcing farmers to come to this country. So the drug wars, the war on drugs, of course, which creates incredible violence and empowers the cartels. So there are many things we can do, even right away, to reduce the pressure pushing people here. And that should be the first thing that we do. And on our day one in office, our administration will legalize cannabis, for starters, to help take the rug out from under the drug cartels, which are forcing people here to flee. We will also end the sanctions on Cuba and Venezuela to stop destroying their economies. We will pay attention and use the Green New Deal to reduce the climate emissions so that we can start addressing the climate causes of migration, which the UN says it will be about 1 billion people by the year 2050 who are climate immigrants. And then let me say, walls kill people. They don't actually work. They kill people by forcing routes of migration. And they kill wildlife and they kill ecosystems. And drugs are not coming across the border in faraway places. They're coming through portals of entry. So we call for a civil infrastructure for actually doing the background checks as people come in and providing people who pass their background checks papers like in Ellis Island so that people can come in and go to work and be an actual asset to their communities.
Chase Oliver, please.
So, I want to say first and foremost that I agree with Jill Stein on many of the things that are causing migration in larger numbers to come to this country, namely the drug war destabilizing our southern neighbors. That's something I absolutely oppose, and let's fight the war machine. Let's fight the drug war together. We can combine ourselves to fight in that effort. What I want to see is a 21st century Ellis Island. I think if you want to come to this country, you should come through a port of entry, declare who you are, do a quick background, a medical check, and then you should be able to come into this country and work. What is driving down wages? The illegality of immigration. Let's improve legal immigration by streamlining the process, letting more and more people come here to contribute. I want to talk about what immigrants do contribute to this country. To those who think that there's some sort of drag on our economy, they could not be any more incorrect. Immigrants contribute to this country. They grow the economic pie. They create jobs. And right now, the economic activity of immigrant-owned businesses in this country is equal to the GDP of the entire nation of Japan, the third largest GDP in the United States. I want to keep that economic activity and that prosperity here in the United States by supporting immigration and supporting immigrants who want to come here and work really hard. If we had a 21st century Ellis Island, we could focus on those high-risk individuals by putting law enforcement's eye on the ball where it really exists. Because 99.9% of people just want to come here and work, and if you create a simplified system for them to do that, they will enter that system. And then you can focus on those who are committing human trafficking or other violations of liberty and actually crack down on those. Walls do not work either, because if you create a 20-foot wall, you're going to have 20-foot ladders being sold south of the border. They do not work, and they steal people's land via eminent domain, which is the theft of people's land by government without their permission. And that has happened on our southern border. That has happened during the Trump border wall building, and it's wrong. If you build property because you enjoy the vistas of Mexico in front of you, you shouldn't have an ugly, disgusting, violent wall put in front of your property with no, without your consent and without your control. Walls are bad. Immigration is good. And let's support the 21st century Ellis Island here in the United States.
Any rebuttals, please?
Walls don't kill people, all right? Drugs kill people, walls don't kill people. That's a ludicrous statement. So the scripture says, be careful how you treat the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. So one thing that we would all agree with is that we have to be kind to immigrants. These are our human brothers and sisters. These are people made in the image of God. So I want to be clear that I'm not calling for cruelty. The point is that people are here illegally. They broke the law. They know that they broke the law to get here. They know that they are running from the law. And our government knows this as well. If there was some kind of a deportment, if there was some kind of deportation that was not violent, that was not hurting people, but nevertheless said, you're going back, people would self-deport, and then we can talk about a legal point of entry. I love the idea. But to say that walls kill people is ludicrous. Look at the rich people. Look at the president. Look at people who have walls. Oh, look, walls work.
Any other, please, Chase. Chase.
So I would argue that walls do not work. I would argue that if you want to say you don't want to have any cruelty in our immigration system, supporting mass deportation is exactly that. You'd be separating families. You would be having people go door to door asking for people's papers. Any person under a certain shade in this country would be suspect by the government. And that is cruelty. That is an invasion of liberty. And mass deportations would not work. And it would cost far too much money. It would cost trillions and trillions of dollars. And it would cost you trillions of dollars to engage in a mass deportation that takes trillions of dollars of economic output that immigrants put in this country out of this country. I don't think that's fair to the immigrants. I don't think that's fair to the American people. And it certainly is not constitutional. And I'll tell you one thing, it absolutely is cruel and unusual.
That's right. Dr. Stein, please.
And also, yes, drugs do kill people. But let's be clear, drugs are being brought into this country not by migrants, but by red-blooded Americans. They are not being brought through the remote areas where a wall might make might make some difference, but actually walls do not keep drugs out. Drugs are coming in through major portals of entry, not through remote areas, and they are being brought again by Americans, not by immigrants. And the notion that migrants raise the crime rate is also exactly false. Migrants are law-abiding, community-supporting, stable people. They actually make the country safer. Yes, there are occasional exceptions here and there, but this is a game of numbers, and overall, migrants are hardworking, dedicated family and community people. They make our country and our communities safer and more prosperous, and we need to celebrate the contribution of immigrants to our country. This is what makes
Thank you. America great. In recent years, our healthcare system has faced challenges. Federal reproductive freedoms have been curtailed, and the opioid and mental health crisis has spiraled out of control among developed countries. The U.S. consistently performs worse in metrics like life expectancy and infant mortality, despite higher healthcare spending. What are the biggest challenges of our healthcare system, and how would you address them?
Well, first and foremost, I want to hit the first part of that question about reproductive freedom. I'm a libertarian. There are libertarians who have both pro-life and pro-choice positions. I'm a pro-choice libertarian. I'm somebody who believes that the right to reproductive freedom is part of the bodily autonomy of each and every individual, and up to the point of viability, we should have the ability for people to access reproductive health care. Post-viability, there should be a note from a doctor for health or life of the mother. These are the standards that were set for by Roe and Casey. I think these are the standards that support bodily autonomy, and that are what I support. As far as the healthcare system in general, it should be no surprise to say that a libertarian thinks there's far too much government involvement in healthcare. And we can reduce the cost of healthcare and improve healthcare outcomes by doing several things. One, allow people to buy health insurance across state lines. That brings more competition into the marketplace. Allow us to buy drugs across national boundaries, which will bring down the cost of prescription drugs here in the United States. Support alternatives to the traditional insurance model like direct primary care and reduce regulation so that we can bring more direct primary care clinics online in more places in the country. But no, we do not need to be getting more government involvement in healthcare. No, that will lead to shortages, that will lead to worse outcomes, and what we need to do is actually allow for more people to have more access. One thing we can do is end patent evergreening of too many prescription drugs that allow it to become too expensive. But no, we do not need a government takeover of healthcare. No, we do not need single-payer healthcare, because it does lead to shortages. It does lead to instances where people do not get the healthcare they need. I recognize the wanting for us to care for each other. I want to care for each other too, but I recognize that doing it through a centralized, bureaucratic government red tape machine that's going to waste our money is not the best way to do it. The best way to help care for those in need is to provide mutual and direct aid, charity, and other things that we can do to help those who are the lower economic rungs be successful and have better healthcare outcomes. But no, I do not support a government takeover of healthcare, because it will not lead to the prosperity that many advocate and they say it will.
Randall Terry.
You have the right to reproduce. You just don't have the right to kill what you have reproduced. That's it. It's a human life. I was one cell once upon a time, and so were every single one of us, one cell. Size of our shoe, the color of our hair, color of our eyes, whether we were male or female, all present in one cell. All we had was time and growth and protection and nutrition. That's it. So no 24-week-old baby or 28-week-old baby or full-term baby is viable when it comes out of the womb. It needs all of those things. This is a human being, and blood talks to God. So if the three of us agreed on every single other issue and made America great again, to steal a phrase, really and truly, but we continued to murder our offspring, America as we know it would perish, because blood talks to God. God told Noah when he got off the boat, shed no blood, for in the image of God made he man. God said, do not pollute the land in which you live, for bloodshed pollutes the land. And those of you who are watching television a lot lately know that we've been on The View, ABC, Jim Kimmel, we're going to be on Univision, running ads that say a vote for Kamala is a vote to murder babies. We have other things in the healthcare world that are a crisis. Maybe we go to a church-run system for the poor. You can use it anytime you want. Everyone who works there pays no taxes. No one who goes there can sue anyone. Let's just completely think outside the box how we provide healthcare for the poor. There are ways to do it. It's been done throughout human history. But the biggest crisis that we are facing is mutilating children's genitals and telling them that that's science, and way more importantly right now, murdering over 1 million human beings a year. It is a curse on our country, and we must bring it to an end. Period.
So,
thank you, Jill. Excuse me.
Thank you. For those who do not approve of abortions, you're welcome not to have them. This is a question of bodily autonomy, which has been standard in the nation for decades. We are not going back. And the repeal of Roe v. Wade resulted in a devastating increase in mortality rates, in perinatal mortality, especially for low-income and poor women, among whom death rates have really spiked. So this is a woman's right to choose, and it should be part of a total health care system. Medicare for All is one example of a system of health care as a human right, which actually provides good care, provides good health outcomes. This country spends more than twice as much as the next biggest spender, and we have abysmal public health statistics, among the worst among all developed nations, and we can do much better. We are spending something like 17% of our GDP on a privatized healthcare system, which has the bureaucracy and the red tape. Medicare cuts overhead from 30% in that privatized system to 3%. So this is efficient. This is not a government bureaucracy. To the contrary, this is a single insurer rather than hundreds of insurers who are all tracking exactly what you use in the course of your healthcare. Right now, if you develop cancer, and cancer rates are going up, especially in young people. If you develop cancer, the odds are about 40% that in the next 2 years you are going to completely spend down your life savings. Something like 8 million people were driven into poverty trying to meet the costs of health care in this country, and yet we have the highest rates of chronic disease in this country relative to all other developed nations. So we can do this right, and we can save over $500 billion a year by cutting out the red tape, waste, and bureaucracy.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Randall.
Ready, everyone? Follow the science. It's not your body. If you want to pierce your ear. It's your body. You want to pierce the heart of a baby in your womb with a knife? That's not your body. Your ears, your body. The baby, not your body. It's a separate body. So, we can figure out ways to be compassionate. We can figure out ways to help people who are in a crisis pregnancy. My mom was in a crisis pregnancy. She was a teenager in the 50s when she was pregnant out of wedlock with me. Thank God that child killing wasn't legal then, or I could have been dead. But we're killing human beings. Let's not call it a baby just for the sake of discussion. Let's call it a human. It is a Homo sapien. Okay? A day after viability, a day before viability, it's a human being. And it's not your body. It's a separate individual's body that has an unique right to life given by God himself. Go to terry2024.com to learn more.
Any more rebuttals? Chase?
I understand Medicare for All sounds good. It does. It sounds, hey, everybody's going to get taken care of, everything will be covered. But the truth is I don't want to put my health care in the same hands of the government that runs Amtrak and the United States Postal Service. That's how you get reduced quality. That's how you get shortages. That's how you get bureaucracy. That's how you get corruption. No, centralization is the way to stifle innovation. Centralization is the way to create more graft and more greed and more corruption. When you decentralize, you have more options in the marketplace and you can hold more people accountable. With regards to abortion, I think there are things that pro-life and pro-choice people can do to reduce the instances of abortion in this country. Make birth control over-the-counter universally so more people can access contraception. Reduce the red tape and barriers around becoming an adoptive parent so more pregnancies end up becoming surrogate pregnancies. And let's fight for better education so we can have more comprehensive sex education in our classrooms so we have less unwanted pregnancies to begin with. These are things that pro-life and pro-choice people can pair up to do in this country here and now to reduce abortion.
Thank you. Since last October, the official number of those killed in Gaza is 40,000. With actual casualty rates potentially being several times that. In Gaza, all the universities and 2/3 of all hospitals have been destroyed. Despite this, the U.S. government continues to send billions of dollars in military aid to Israel, allegedly in support of Jewish safety. Do you support Israel as a Jewish state? And if not, how would you keep Jewish people safe, Randall?
Randall Terry's answer suggested that while everyone mourned for the death of Gaza civilians, he saw the Islamic faith at the heart of the conflict, a threat to freedom, and that Israel had the right to eradicate the leadership of Hezbollah and Hamas and the rest committed to destroying Israel. In the opinion of this editor, his remarks had to be edited out as being too Islamophobic for broadcast on this radio station. There are many, many people of the Islamic faith in science, arts, medicine, and humanitarian work contradicting this point. People are free to listen directly to his remarks on the website freeandequal.org. Here now is Jill Stein, followed by Chase Oliver.
Jill Stein.
Well, I don't want to dignify this kind of blatant racism and Islamophobia and xenophobia. I'm not even going to respond to it except to condemn it and say that this is an embarrassment and a shame on all of us here in this room. So we repudiate this. I think you may speak for a handful of people, and I'm sorry for you. I speak as a Jew. I speak as a Jew who grew up after the Holocaust. I speak as a Jew who's been very involved in standing up to stop genocide, because when I grew up after the Holocaust, I was told that we must never let genocide happen again, not to anyone. And I grew up with that as understanding this is how we discover life after genocide, which is what my community was asking after the Holocaust. How do we find life after genocide? By affirming that it will not happen again. And we held accountable not only those who perpetrated genocide, but the bystanders to genocide. And I'm proud to be among those who will not stand by and allow this blood to be on our hands with our tax dollars from our weapons and our diplomatic cover. This is absolutely an embarrassment. I want to add that Jews, Muslims, and Christians have lived together in peace for centuries. And anyone who says otherwise does not know what they are talking about. They are just spouting utter bigotry, shameless bigotry. What disturbed the peace was not Jews, it was Zionists. Zionism is an ideology of displacement, of ethnic cleansing that has led to the genocide. That is the problem. That can be fixed. The world's community of nations agrees on this. The International Court of Justice agrees. Israel needs to stop the genocide, and the U.S. can stop the genocide right now with a simple phone call by ending the flow of weapons to Israel.
Chase Oliver. Chase.
So I got my start in activism being an anti-war activist, and this war is no different. I'm tired of seeing governments killing innocent people, and that's governments on both sides. I'm tired of governments in this region communicating with each other by firing rockets and munitions at each other. It's not individual Israelis, it's not individual Palestinians, it's not individual Muslims, Christians, Jews, or otherwise that are perpetrating this violence. It's the governments that claim to represent those people. And government is violence, and we are party to it because we back the nation of Israel with billions and billions of dollars with arms. They would not be exacerbating this war and furthering tensions in Lebanon, which has created a million displaced people in Lebanon, poking the eye of Iran. They would not be doing this if they weren't absolutely certain that the United States government would not be backing them every step of the way. We need to be demanding peace in the region. Yes, October 7th was a horrible day. Yes, the lives that were lost were tragic and horrible. But we need to be demanding that a better response that is not killing tens of thousands of Gazans, leveling billions of dollars worth of infrastructure, and taking these people back to barely anything at all, where they are struggling to survive, and they are dying of starvation, they are dying of dirty water, and they are dying because missiles are raining down upon them. We do not need to be supporting a warfare state, and as the United States, we need to be demanding peace in the region. And I don't know if it's one state, two states. What I want to see is the individual people coming together to direct both the Netanyahu government, which perpetrates violence, and they're doing so because they know as soon as the war stops, the questions about the Netanyahu government's corruption and what caused October 7th happens begin begins. So he wants to keep the war going. And we also need to speak out against Hamas, who has used the people of Palestine against themselves and have caused massive misery as well. Reject violence from any government and support peaceful people wanting to live their lives in peace, whether they are Israeli or Palestinian. Let them live their lives with human dignity and stop communicating with violence, bombs, drones, death, and misery. It's time for us as the United States to be the champion of peace in the world, end the war, and free.
Welcome back. Now we have a 30-second quick response on this one. No rebuttal, although Dr. Stein's the only one that has a rebuttal left, I might add. So, what do you think is the most important topic for this election that is not being talked about? And I think it's Jill, Dr. Stein.
I think, you know, we're in an expanding war right now, an expanding and very dangerous war. Growing out of the genocide in Gaza by the State of Israel, which is effectively acting as our proxy, we are supplying the weapons, the military aid, the diplomatic cover, the intelligence, and Israel is on the verge of attacking Iran. Russia is likely to be brought into this war. We are sitting on a powder keg on the verge of World War III. This needs to be debated. It's absolutely being ignored. This is why we all need to be in this election.
Thank you. Chase Oliver. Chase Oliver, please.
So I will echo Dr. Jill Stein's sentiments right here. The thing that's not being talked about in the debates between the debate between Harris and Trump or any of their surrogates or anything that's going on is the fact that we are a warfare state. The fact that we have money being made, military corporate warfare that helps to benefit giant corporate interests by exporting death and misery around the world, destabilizing the world, and bringing the world against the United States and its people. It needs to be talked about enough, and we don't have people who are brave enough to tear down the warfare state on the main stage. I'm glad we're here doing it.
Randall Terry.
The Democrat war on children. The Democrat Party is at war with children. Kill them till the day of birth by abortion. Indoctrinate them in school that all white people are racist, or that communism is good, and that socialism is perfect, and that capitalism is bad. Give them a condom or a pill and some pornography and say, here's birth control, and go have some fun. You've had sex education. We'll get you an abortion behind your mom's back. We'll give you the pill behind your mom and dad's back. This country is at war with children, and it is spearheaded by the Democrat Party, which is why it must be
We've been listening to the October 23rd Free and Equal Presidential Debate, featuring Jill Stein of the Greens, Chase Oliver of the Libertarian Party, and Randall Terry of the Constitution Party. It was edited for this week's broadcast. If you want to listen to the entire debate, go to freeandequal.org and click on the Debates tab in the top menu. You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour program, funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Innu, Oji, Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation, the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. Our shows are available to partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback, please email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. Many thanks to Free and Equal for allowing us to use audio from the event. We leave you now with God Bless the Child by Shania Twain, sung in person by singer Shyla Ray during one of the many musical interludes during the debate.
Just want to express that it's my absolute honor and pleasure to share this song as a First Nations person from Canada, so thank you for having me here. I want to dedicate this song to the children of Palestine. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. God bless the child who suffers. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. God bless the young without mothers. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Every man of his brothers.